9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring today. Robert Half is here to help. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
We have new details about the massive train derailment near the Ohio-Pennsylvania border.
We know what derailed the train. We have a lot of questions.
And the U.S. has plans to increase its troop presence in Taiwan.
For Taiwan, certainly the deployment of these forces is a very solid, and now because of our reporting, a more visible commitment to Taiwan's defense to help the island deter a potential invasion by China.
Plus, is today the new Friday? It's Thursday, February 23rd. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. In a report released today, federal transportation officials say an overheated bearing on a train car was the likely cause of a massive Norfolk Southern train derailment earlier this month near the Ohio-Pennsylvania border. 38 rail cars derailed and fire damaged another 12, according to the National Transportation Safety Board. 11 of them were carrying hazardous material, including the toxic gas vinyl chloride. NTSB Chair Jennifer Homendy began a press conference this afternoon by addressing the residents of East Palestine.
This was 100% preventable. We call things accidents. There is no accident. Every single event that we investigate is preventable. So our hearts are with you. Know that the NTSB has one goal, and that is safety and ensuring that this never happens again.
The NTSB is continuing its investigation, and Homendy said it will hold a rare investigative field hearing in the spring to question witnesses about the derailment. Our reporter Chris Marr has been covering this story, and he says residents are still struggling to cope.
It's more than 2 weeks after the accident, and people in East Palestine are still looking for answers. They still feel like they're not quite getting enough information about the chemicals that spilled during the derailment. And they're concerned about the potential long-term health consequences of being in the town. You know, they were told to evacuate shortly after the derailment, but then within a matter of a couple of days, they were told to come back while the air and water monitoring were still ongoing. And some people think, you know, maybe they were brought back too soon.
The CEO of Norfolk Southern has said the railroad will pay for environmental remediation and monitoring and help residents recover for as long as it takes. Crypto exchange FTX's founder, Sam Bankman-Fried, is facing new charges from federal prosecutors alleging he engaged in conduct that led to the exchange's collapse. The charges unsealed in an indictment today include conspiracy to operate an unlicensed transmitting business and conspiracy to commit bank fraud. Prosecutors also provided more details on FTX's business practices, alleging that since 2019, billions of dollars in FTX customer funds were illegally used as capital for the crypto exchange's investment arm, Alameda Research. Bankman-Fried pled not guilty to 8 prior criminal counts connected to FTX's collapse late last year. Disgraced Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein has been sentenced to 16 years in prison after a California jury found him guilty of 3 counts of sexual assault and related crimes. He had pleaded not guilty to all charges. Weinstein was already sentenced to 23 years in prison in a New York court in 2020. He has appealed the New York conviction. Ozzie Media and its CEO Carlos Watson have been indicted on charges of lying to investors and lenders about its audience and business. Watson was arrested this morning in a Manhattan hotel. He is accused of falsifying information about the performance of the media company and inflating projected earnings in an effort to secure millions of dollars in investments to offset mounting debt. Ozzie and Watson both came under federal scrutiny after the New York Times reported in 2021 that Ozzie's COO impersonated a YouTube executive in a fundraising call with Goldman Sachs. That same COO, Samir Rao, pleaded guilty to fraud and identity theft charges in a secretive federal court proceeding earlier this week. A lawyer from Ozzie says the company had previously been engaged in discussion with the government toward a potential resolution without criminal charges. Coming up, we report exclusively that the U.S. military is expanding its troop presence in Taiwan to help the island guard against a rising threat from China's military. More after the break.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
The U.S. is boosting its troop presence in Taiwan amid a rising threat from China's People's Liberation Army. Between 100 and 200 new U.S. troops will deploy to Taiwan in the coming months, according to U.S. officials, expanding an existing training program that the Pentagon hasn't publicized. The increase in American forces on the island would create the largest deployment in decades. But the U.S. is walking a fine line as it seeks to help Taiwan without provoking China. Joining me now to help understand the situation and what might happen next is our White House and national security reporter, Gordon Lubold. Hi, Gordon. Thanks for being here.
Great to be here.
So to start, what can you tell us about the U.S. training program in Taiwan? How long has it been in place? How many U.S. troops are there? And how are they working to train Taiwanese troops?
So the current force, although it's not classified, it's sensitive politically and otherwise. And so the Pentagon and the White House don't tend to publicize the numbers. We reported in October 2021 that there were about 30 American forces, give or take, on any given day doing training of Taiwanese forces. Of course, the U.S. has a very robust program to arm Taiwan. There's Stingers and Javelins and some of these other kinds of defense weaponry that would help Taiwan in the event of an invasion. What the U.S. is trying to do is to have enough forces there to train Taiwanese military forces on a lot of the stuff the U.S. provides them.
So what's prompting the U.S. to increase the deployment now?
Right. So the war in Ukraine has informed a lot of thinking around the world about conflict. The stark difference between the U.S. ability to defend Ukraine or to help Ukraine defend itself and the U.S. ability to help Taiwan defend itself is that you don't have a Poland next door where you can heave billions of dollars of weaponry over the border. You can't do that in Taiwan. The whole point of all of this, not only the training, but the arming of the Taiwan military is what some people call a porcupine strategy, which is to create an island which is not hospitable for invasion, to deter China from potentially invading the island, which is reported as, could happen as early as 2027, according to U.S. officials. There's a possibility, according to some analysts and some other experts, that it could happen earlier than that.
And how does this deployment fit more generally into the U.S. presence around Asia more broadly? Are we seeing that ramping up?
You are seeing countries, particularly the Philippines recently, where the U.S. and the Philippines government just announced that there would be four new bases where American forces will be based. You're seeing some of these countries start to get a little bit concerned about what China may or may not do in the coming years. And so for Taiwan, certainly, the deployment of these forces is a very solid, and now because, frankly, because of our reporting, a more visible commitment to Taiwan's defense to help the island deter a potential invasion by China, when I think a lot of other countries think that the U.S. is distracted by the war in Ukraine.
This is a tricky balance, though, right? Because the U.S. is trying not to provoke China, and Taiwan has often been at the center of disagreements between the U.S. and China.
That's exactly right. They really do walk a balance. And I was having a conversation with somebody yesterday at the Pentagon on this issue in particular, because what we've learned again from the war in Ukraine is the U.S. provides certain weaponry and kind of walks up to the line it thinks it has. And then if it doesn't provoke Russia in that case, it kind of takes another step and takes maybe a more slightly more lethal form of weaponry. And we just saw recently where the U.S. has agreed to provide tanks to Ukraine. I think there's a little similar thing here where the U.S. is trying to defend Taiwan and deter an invasion, but it's doing it very quietly and very incrementally to kind of test the waters, almost literally, right? And at this point, because of various factors feeding into a low relationship right now, chiefly lately, of course, the spy balloon, which China is very embarrassed about, but also angry that it got shot down. It's not a good relationship. It's not very strong. But the deterrence and the defense of the island kind of must go on, I think, is the view. And so they'll do what they need to do.
I've been speaking with Wall Street Journal, White House, and national security reporter Gordon Lubold. Gordon, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Our reporters reached out to the Chinese embassy in Washington for comment. They did not immediately respond. And finally, imagine if we only had a four-day work week. That would basically make today Friday. The dream. Ends up, it might not just be a dream, as Vanessa Furmans, our Careers and Workplace Deputy Bureau Chief, wrote about a recent trial study for a shortened work schedule. And the story is getting a lot of attention, including here at the Wall Street Journal. Vanessa spoke with our Your Money briefing host, J.R. Whalen, about the four-day work week. And he joins me now with some highlights. Hey, J.R., great to have you here on What's News.
Hey, Anne-Marie, thanks for having me.
So a four-day work week sounds pretty good, and there are plenty of folks in favor of this. So what's the problem?
Well, yeah, I mean, who wouldn't want a four-day work week, right? I mean, five is just way too much. But, you know, the interesting thing about this study that was done with about 60 British companies and about 3,000 workers is employees liked it, their bosses liked it, it saved a lot of time. If people have a five-day work week, they will spread their work out across 5 days. And when they had 4 days to do the work, they got their work done within 4 days.
JR, I'm wondering what is taken out of that fifth day that made the four-day work week work so well?
Well, we all hate meetings, and it was a bunch of meetings that were taken off of people's plates. And one of the CEOs that Vanessa Furman spoke to said that they saw that 20% of employees' time was probably wasted as what they called inefficiencies. You know, we're all working at our desks, and then we're sitting in meetings and we go, I got to get back to my desk. I'm sitting here across this table. We're staring at each other. We're looking at PowerPoints. Okay, can we get on with this? Well, maybe there's some legitimacy to that anxiety.
All right, plenty of insights there. And we have more on this story on today's episode of the Your Money Briefing podcast, which JR here hosts every weekday. Take a listen. Thanks so much, JR.
Thank you, Anne-Marie.
And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. And given that the work week is indeed 5 days long, we will be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.